Welcome our speaker, Ante from the Port Fishington Speakers Group.
Hi everybody, Ante Alcoholics. I have a sobriety date. It's August 24, 2008. My home group, Sport Fishington speaker meeting with me tonight, 7:30. I actually don't ever go anywhere on my home group except this meeting. I've been coming here, since this meeting started. I was just talking to my buddy outside before I walked in. He said this is going to be probably the first time I walked into this meeting. There's nobody, none of the guys that started the meeting, not a single guy, but Dave showed up. yeah, this is the only meeting. If somebody calls me to speak on Monday night, the answer is no. It's my home group. That's it. End of story. Obviously, hear my accent. I'm not from Quakertown area. I insisted on geographical cure for alcoholism. And also here to report that this continent is not working either. I tried everything. I didn't know what's wrong with me. That's why it's, for me at least, it's really important to say I am an alcoholic. Because for a long time, I didn't know what's wrong with me. I don't want anything I say here tonight that any of you guys take as a personal indictment of what I think you should be doing in AA, because honestly, I could really care less. But I also, I don't know. I look at a lot of people and what they do in AA, and I feel like a lot of people look at me and they say, call that a sponsorship. And I see a lot of people and I say to myself the same thing. So, you know, I come from, I'm sorry, I have a gum. Nicotine. It's like alcohol. It is. You know, what makes me an alcoholic, what makes me belong here is that I have allergic reaction to alcohol. And that's it. I came up, nothing strange in my childhood. There was no abuse. There was no dysfunction. There was nothing. I have two older sisters, loving parents, and I had everything, you know, I wanted and needed in life. But I don't know, as far as my memory goes back, I just always felt weird. Just always felt off, just like, didn't like myself, shy. Just weird looking kid. I was really, really tall and really skinny. I was about 6'2" before I was like 10 years old. Big ears, big nose, just did not like myself. I remember there's, you know, both of my sisters, I'm, you know, physicians, so there's always medical magazines all over the place. I remember, reading one of the magazines being really young and it said, I was just like so freaked out the way I look, how big my ears were when I was little. And I remember reading the magazine and it said there's only two organs in the human body that never stop growing till the day you die. It's your ears and your nose. And I'm like, holy fuck. Oh my God, I had like a panic attack. I'm like, I'm gonna use like a fucking Yoda in 10 years. But I mean, that was just like, what was going on? Where I come from, we don't have a Puritan system of society like you guys have here. So there's no legal limit for drinking. It's a pretty good deal for alcoholics. But honestly, you know, looking at the laws and having a little bit of experience living here and there, it's like we don't have more alcoholics than you guys have. It's just like you can go order drink when you're 15. Nobody's asking for ID, basically. So I remember going out drinking with my buddies and, alcohol had I had a powerful experience drinking first time. I was the guy that was just like, whatever, burning bush, whatever you want to call it, but the world changed. Everything around me changed. I love what, and that's what makes me an alcoholic, is what alcohol does for me, not what it does to me. Alcohol does for me exactly what it steps you for. Same thing. It changes my perception. I'm aggressive and violent. That's how I am. I was just like always so, you know, so stuck in my own skin that I was just always so edgy. And then you take a few beers and I'm ready to go. That was like the story of my life. I'm always in a blackout. Now, like 99% of my drinking, I was in a blackout. I didn't know you guys call them blackouts. I used to call them time travels because I thought just like everybody drinks like that. Just get up and like my buddies would tell me like stupid shit that I did last night. And like I said, alcohol was a lot of fun. Alcohol saved my life. That's what alcohol did. Alcohol saved my life long enough so I can come here. If I didn't have booze, I would probably be one of them teenage suicide kids. But that was me. I found booze and I was ready to go. Like, just to paint a picture, I will, you know, come to bar and I'm really pissed off and everything just gray and sucks. And I'm looking at all the chicks in the bar. Everybody looks horrible. I'm measuring every dude because that's what I do. I handle all these losers here. Music sucks. Bar just sucks. And then I take like 5 shots of tequila. Turn around, she lost 30 pounds. I'm like, man, this is pretty cool. Like, what do you want to drink? I love this place. That's what alcohol does for me. That's exactly what alcohol does every time. It changes my perception that I'm comfortable in my own skin and I like being me. That's booze for me. And I pursued that as much as I could, as often as I could. I functioned perfectly under the influence because alcohol was just like a piece that was just missing. And that's it. Nothing. Ben finished first grade of high school. I was come from Croatia. It was like my first resentment came in the United States. I came here on a scholarship here in Temple. And I remember every time I was like open my mouth, one of you guys said, "Are you Russian?" I'm like, "No, I'm not." "Where are you from?" "Like Croatia." "Well, that's close to Russia." I'm like, "No, fucking Philly is closer to Russia." Like, imbecile. Like, I would be just like so aggravated. But I'm from Croatia. You know, I give myself opportunity to give a history lesson every time I speak. But Croatia is far away from Russia. It's on the Mediterranean, on the beach, and it was part of Yugoslavia. And Yugoslavia was communist. And in 99, we declared independence and civil war blew up overnight. And everybody between 15 and 8 and 65 were drafted. 15 and 55, I'm sorry, were drafted. I was 15 at the time. My best friend joined the military. And I was young and up-and-coming alcoholic. I know it's going to come as a surprise to you guys, but I have a really big ego, and I really thought I'm just going to... I watched too many Chuck Norris movies probably at the time, but I really thought I'm just going to handle this war situation on my own real quick so we can all kind of move on. And I joined the military, and I stayed, and I got stuck there for 5 years. And I did everything you do in war. I seen everything you see in war. There's not too many... I don't know, Saving Private Ryan moments, but it's fear. That's what the war is. You're petrified 24 hours a day, and you are loaded 24 hours a day. That's all I need, ammunition and liquor. And that's what I got for the next 5 years. There was like a few times there would be no liquor. And then I would just walk straight to infirmary, take ethanol, which is, for those of you who don't know, it's 97% alcohol. That's it. Top shelf. There's no 98% alcohol. Doesn't exist. And I'll take ethanol. I knew from my bio classes that you can't drink that because you're going to go blind. But if you take ethanol, take a rag, rub it in your head, it works. So for those of you not done drinking yet, Try some control ethanol rub and see how that works out. But that's the extent that I'm not staying sober. I will not stay sober because sobriety sucks. And that's the extent I would go not to stay sober. In those 5 years, I got shot twice, and I developed heroin addiction. That's what I always mention in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I hate speakers talking about. I started using powder form of alcohol because that shit doesn't exist. I my alcoholism progressed. I want to make a distinction here. My alcoholism progressed to heroin addiction, and that's it. And I say that because that's the truth. But I never came to Alcoholics Anonymous, introduced myself as an alcoholic and a drug addict, because I'm not a drug addict. You know, drug addiction stops the moment I stop using. That's it. If you take any person on this planet, anybody, and you give them heroin for a week, they will be addicted to it. End of story. That's the principle of heroin. But you take alcohol and you give it to any human being on this planet, only this guy gets addicted to alcohol. Only alcoholic gets addicted to alcohol. And that's what makes me an alcoholic. That's why I'm not a drug addict. So that's what started. Like war was over. I was 21. I was full. It wasn't addiction to heroin. It was addiction to morphine because of my injuries that later progressed to heroin. But now I'm 21. I don't have education. The war is over. And I'm out of my mind. And now there are, you know, numerous trips to wherever, you know, the therapy, psychiatry, my sister shipped me everywhere possible to figure out, you know, what's wrong with me. Because I'm out of my mind, and now, you know, I'm coming up, and not that I'm coming up, you know, when you have a symptoms of alcoholism, you have symptoms, what I believe, all kind of conditions. You know, I'm bringing those symptoms to the people who can't help me with all their degrees. And I'm talking about symptoms. And then you get diagnosed with all kind of stuff that has nothing to do with what's really wrong. And I'm also, just like the big book talks about, I come there asking for help, and then I'm lying, because, you know, I can't tell the truth. You don't. What are you going to think about me? You know, that's the story of my life. So, you know, at the end of that protocol was, I don't know, panic attacks, bipolar disorder, PTSD, ADHD, ACDC. I had every goddamn diagnosis you can have, a bunch of medication, nothing was helping. Even, like I said, alcohol was a lot of fun. I love drinking, love everything about booze. But then the fun just wasn't fun no more. Now I wake up out of my blackout and my gun is completely discharged and I don't know what I did last night. And shit like that start happening. And I'm like, I know. The way I operate is on intellect and reason. That's how I live. It's like there's nothing that I can't figure out. And that was one of the things that I started consciously. You know, this is just getting out of control. I gotta, you know, so I gotta control this in a sense. And so I just, you know, I'm the guy at the big book. Hide booze from yourself. Don't drink liquor in the morning. Don't drink liquor, period. Let's drink wine. Let's do this. Let's do that. Eventually everything comes down to the same thing. You know, everybody around me. Any kind of prolonged exposure to me will get you hurt. You know, cause I live, cause I'm like a big baby with umbilical cord. Just waiting to plug in and suck you dry. Not because I'm bad, not because I'm evil, just because I don't know how else to live, and that's how I live. You know, just like so selfish and so self-centered that after I suck every emotion and every dollar bill, I just move on from, like a virus, going from host to host to host. And that's how I live my whole life. You know, I was drunk one night in a bar. I thought these two smoking twins want to get with me. I was all about that. What was really going on. And that's also a story of my life. What I think is going on and what's really going on. And that's all I have here tonight. That's all I have. I have a perception of what I think happened in my life. If my mom comes and speaks about me for an hour, that would be completely different stories. That's what I thought. Two of them want to get with me, and what was really going on was just like one lady who was there with her husband. I was obviously seeing double by that time. And her husband wasn't into me at all. And, you know, by the end of that night, I ended up getting stabbed all over my chest, ended up going into a coma, lost a lot of blood. Just another episode. You know, and I wake up and it's 3 days later, and my mother and my sister, one of my sisters and my girlfriend at the time, they were like sleeping in a, you know, same room on the beds next to me for days until I got up. And I remember that was the first time in my life that I said to my mother, I'm done. You know, I'm never going to do this again. I, you know, I didn't want none of that. You know, I wasn't That's another thing with alcoholism. Alcoholism don't care. You know, alcoholism don't give a shit that you want to be a good boy. I mean, I meet a lot of people and like sponsor a bunch of people. It's like I gotta do this because alcoholism don't care. You know what I mean? You can say whatever. I have two kids at home. I have a night shift. I have a mom in a wheelchair. That's fucking great and noble, but alcoholism don't care. Alcoholism don't give a shit. And that's what I thought. I'm never going to do this again because I don't want to. And I made a promise to everybody around me that I love the most. And you can put me on a polygraph machine. I wasn't lying. But alcoholism don't care. And I was basically laying in that bed. I couldn't even move. The, you know, for over 30 days because of my injuries, my muscles atrophied in my legs so much that they put me in a wheelchair. And first day I got my wheels, overdose in the hospital, because that's what I do. And then they found me in the bathroom and like, what's wrong with you? I don't know. I know, a lot of, you know, even in AA, people will talk about, you know, trying to scare tactics. You know what I mean? Stay, you're gonna die. It's like that shit doesn't, you know, fraud the emotional appeal. That shit doesn't work for me. No matter how hard or how much I want, my mother's love cannot save me. Period. Therapy, psychiatry, rehab institutions, couple of girlfriends. I decided, I always wanted to be a zoologist, but this time, I missed on a high school because I spent 5 years in military. Also, when you're from Croatia, here in the United States, you also have privilege to fuck your life all up and then you just go pass GED and you're good to go. Well, we don't have that privilege. So I was 21 years old and I was sitting in the second grade of high school with 15-year-old kids. And I went, I wanted to get a career. I wanted to make money because I thought, I'm so insane and I just want to be at peace. I just want to be happy. And I always thought that, you know, in order to get that, you got to get, you got to be a big shot. You got to make money. That's what I thought. That equals happiness. And I went in the pursuit of that, went to, you know, finished high school and I went to college, business school. And my mom knows, and my mom was like, why? You're like, what are you doing? It's like, why are you chasing money so much? Money's not gonna keep you happy. And I would tell mom, only the broke people always say that. And it's like, and I went in a pursuit of a career that I am not the type, for those who know me, to sit in a cubicle. But that's what I did. I went in a pursuit of the business career. I was dating a girl and, I thought, I need to calm down and settle down. This, you know, drinking is coming on a decade now, and was another bright idea. I'm just gonna get married, have a couple of kids, and that will chill me out. And you know, I was dating this girl on and off a few years, and nothing. We got back together quickly, got pregnant really quickly, AA style pregnancy, and we were like off to the, you know, living life. And like I said, I did to her what I did to everybody else around me. You know, I sucked every emotion out of her. There was nothing left. And she was like, I'm done. We are not getting married. We are not having a kid. I'm having an abortion and that's it. And, you know, my sponsor calls them direct hits. It's like, he says alcoholic doesn't respond to like near misses because they're like constant, but direct hit you feel. And I felt it. And I, you know, by that time in my life, it's just like, I have somewhat of a delusion that like I was, you know, playing a victim role. And if you would meet me in a bar and I would tell you the reason why I'm drinking is because I had to do all this shit and my father was a dick or whatever the story I would give. But, you know, always inside of me, just like I always knew that like I'm the common denominator and all this shit, everything I touch turns into shit. And I was just like disgusted with myself. And that was the time and I'm like, I'm done. I'm never going to drink again. And I moved, you know, I spent a couple of years in Italy. Same thing. You know, just to give you a rundown, in the next 6-7 years was just nothing but drinking and moving all over. I speak 5 different languages, not because I was like trying to be a linguist, mind you. I was just moving from place to place, trying to fix me. That was the last of it. I moved from Italy to Germany. I got a scholarship on Temple. I didn't drink for a year and a half. No AA, never heard of AA, never, just stopped drinking. Super miserable. On the outside, stuff looks good. You take away alcohol from me, I will not stay hungry. If you know what I mean. I will quench that thirst with whatever, and what I do, I'm best in being workaholic. That's what I do. I can study or work 16-hour days if it's necessary, and, you know, until what I thought is just gonna, I just gotta get over the bump. Because, you know, until then, I never could stay sober more than like a few months at a time, and then I, you know, I ended up coming here in Philadelphia. It was 2002. And that's it. It was my senior year, and I got your American dream. I got what you guys are selling here. Like, within a year, I was making six-figure income, bought a house, Lower Merion, two-car garage. I fucking made it. And the future looked bright. Very, very bright. I mean, financially. And every goddamn morning, driving down the Schuylkill Expressway, going to work, I want to turn on the 18-wheeler and get it fuck over with. And I'm 2 years sober. Sobriety sucks. That's why. Sobriety sucks. It's like, I didn't know what's wrong with me. It's like, I don't have alcohol in me for over 2 years and everything looks perfect and I'm like, suicidal. I'm ready for an exorcist. And I, don't know what to do, so I go to therapy. That's the only thing I know. I hire a therapist and I have a session with her and I tell her fucking demons and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And she said, oh, that's normal. I'm like, what do you mean that's normal? You have to be on top of your class. What do you mean it's normal? She said, it's normal for international students to feel a little bit alienated when they come to a foreign country. I'm like, ma'am, you don't understand. I feel like this on a Christmas dinner with my fucking family has nothing to do with me being here. Absolutely nothing. And she has prescriptions, and I wasn't into prescriptions. People talked about some kind of insanity preceding the first drink. I don't have that either. I know exactly where booze is going to take me, and I want to go there. I know exactly where I'm going to go, and that's what I did. I was like 2 years sober, and I got loaded. And in the next 2 years, I don't know what got you here, but I, the only chance a guy like me has in recovery, I was soulless when I ended up here. There is absolutely nothing inside and outside of me that I'm not willing to trade for the feeling alcohol gives me, period. That's it. You want your education and career, or you want liquor? I want liquor. You want your house, or you want to get loaded, I want to get loaded. You want the respect of your family and friends, or you want to be loaded, I want to be loaded. And within 2 years, I was homeless, right down to Kensington, like really cute neighborhood of Philadelphia. I was okay. Listen, I wasn't planning to be homeless. That was not like my New Year's resolution. I wasn't raised to be homeless. But like I said, alcoholism don't give a shit. Alcoholism just don't care. And I was homeless. I'm ready to go when I'm homeless. I always thought I'm really tough. What I am, I'm definitely not tough, but I'm very, very dangerous when I'm full of fear. And that's how I'm running the street. I'm running like an animal, just hoping that I'm going to meet another animal just like me who can probably, hopefully, put a bullet in me in one of them shitty dark alleys where I'm living and get it over with. And there will be a breath in me. I will probably say thank you. And that ended January 24, 2004. I blacked out like I usually do. And I woke up like I usually do, my usual morning blackout. Woke up, now I'm in the backseat of a pickup truck. Two guys are driving, you know, one guy was driving, a guy in the passenger seat. I got up, I'm like, I don't know what the fuck is going on. One of them turned to me and said, what's up, G? It's like, yo, what's up? Like, you gotta pull over, what's going on? There were sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, found me laying in a slum in the middle of that avenue, just put me in a car and brought me to my first AA meeting, for that matter. So I come to this building, holy shit. I always try, but you can't even describe the place. Places, it didn't have the name, but the guy from Texas named it. Texas Troy ended up naming it Last Stop. It's a spot on Kensington Avenue. So when I ended up here, I was the first crew of guys that were there. So I'm there, and there's like five, six, it's just the meeting is going on. So like they brought me in, I'm homeless for like a few months. So the room is like this height. Half of the roof is missing. There's like a blue tarp over there. Like there's half of, there's no floor for like this whole section. There's no floor. Dog with three legs is fucking running around in the meeting. And I'm like, yo, you gotta be kidding me. And I'm here, I'm like looking at you guys in the meeting. It's going on, the preamble, whatever. It's not like I remember anything, but I remember looking at him like, what a bunch of fucking losers. Look at this crew. I feel like, as an alcoholic and a new person coming into AA, I feel like I'm not looking for a way in. I am looking for a way out. And it takes me about 10 seconds to separate. That's all it takes. I just look at you guys and I'm like, I'm not even fucking American. That's all it takes for me. I'm not even American. It's some American bullshit. It's some bullshit for people who have problems with drinking. I don't have problem with drinking. Alcohol creates problems. Oh, I know that. Oh, I know that. But alcohol solves problems. And the problems that alcohol solves are far more valuable than problems that alcohol will create. And then I'm looking at you guys and I'm not one of you guys. Because that's what I thought you guys are. It's like a society of people who have problems with drinking. So you guys get together on your little meetings, hold on to one another, you know, and one decides, man, I want to drink. I'm like, no. Yeah. And like I said, I just wasn't interested. And I was sitting there wasting time and I was ready to go. And this kid would come there. I live in the same neighborhood. The neighborhood is completely different. Every property that you see is at minimum of $500,000. That last stop building is no longer there. It's 2440 lofts. But back in the day, I met a ton of people from Philadelphia. They would not dare to walk there. Kensington, I would send my wife to Kensington these days at 3 a.m. without any fear. It's nothing happening there. A bunch of drug addicts trying to steal some baby formula for them. But I'm saying, in 2004, it was different. And nobody was coming there. Nobody was coming there unless you're from that neighborhood. And this kid would come there, and he looked straight like he came from golf outing. And he would come there every night, like 21-year-old from Maryland, being old, skipping around, being happy. He was working as associate in Olive Garden. He lived in Springfield. He would come there with DL every night, and he was just like trying to help the guys. I just didn't know what was going on at the time. But I remember him sitting across from me one night, and we ended up talking. And he did what we do here. He shared his experience. That's what I'm trying to do here tonight. It's a simple job to share, in a general way, what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today, not what it was like. Because what it was like for me is different for everybody, has your own it. But what we were like, when I talk about emptiness and loneliness and feeling like I can be in the room full of my clones and still feel like completely different, then you know what we're talking about. And I know when I talk about that with my sisters, they don't know their head. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? But that's what he was talking to me. He was talking about hole in the soul. I related. I feel like I had a byproduct of what AA is. I had hope. That's exactly what happened. He just shared his experience. Like, let me tell you something. I knew one thing about me being a new guy here. I was 100% fake. Nothing about me was real. I was nothing but fake person that by the time he ended up here, I hated my guts. That was my condition, and he wasn't like that. I can recognize that in him. He was like, he was laughing. Like I said, he talked about history of AA. That's the first thing I told my guys, and it's important, not for the sake of the knowledge, not for the sake that I know how my society started, but for the sake that we know what is Alcoholics Anonymous. AA history shows us that AA worked before we had this, before we had, you know, meetings and old-timers and one-liners and speakers and all this shit, before we had Big Book written. It works. That's what it is. It's one alcoholic sharing his experience with another. That's it. For free, for fun, for the sole purpose of recovery. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what my sponsor did for me. I don't remember listening too much what he was saying, but I remember seeing what he was doing. And if you're new here, don't listen to the dude sharing AI. I didn't raise my hand in Alcoholics Anonymous, not one time in the last 20 years since I've been here. But I see what people are doing. You know, my sponsor showed me AA. He was showing up in time, leaving early, leaving late, coming early, sponsoring cars. I did not, you know, my recovery didn't happen in the AA meeting because nothing happens here. Nothing. It's like sitting here for 60 minutes listening to some dude from Russia speak and this. Nothing happens. You know, my recovery happened on a before, after, diners, bowling alleys, parking lots, everywhere else but the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I recover quickly. You know what I mean? My sponsor, we were talking, like I said, AA, blah, 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 history. And then, you know, I was brought up Catholic. I, parents never pushed that on me. This is about God. And that's it. And it sucks for people like me who come here not believing. You know, I came here militant atheist. And, you know, basically the deal that you give me is like, you have a condition that's chronic, that's progressive, that's incurable, and terminal, by the way. Sorry, we forgot that. And the only way you can get better is to find something that you don't believe in even exists. No problem. Got it. Yeah, easy work. So that was me. So when he said you believe in God, I'm like, dude, no. No. He said, have you ever been right about something? 100% sure you would bet your life on it. And then later on it turned up you've been wrong. Maybe. Long time ago. And that's what he said. He said, maybe you've been wrong about God. And that's what I believe the second step is. It's for you to open your mind. It's for you to open your heart. And you take these actions that you don't believe they're going to work. But you take them anyway because you've got nothing else to do. And then God, whatever God is, prove himself to you personal. That's it. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. I wrote my inventory. I'm the guy out of the big book who was hiding the worst item in stock. Because what is he going to think of me? I wrote it down. I gave it to him. He just took the paper and turned it upside down and said, Ante, tell me the worst thing you did that you didn't put on the paper. Like he knew. I'm getting chills just talking about it. I'm like, Scott, if you tell this to anybody, I'll execute your whole goddamn family. I promise you. And I'm quoting myself on that. And it's nothing. It's nothing. It's not the story that you're going to hear. It's not the story that's going to come out of my mouth on the podium, but it's a story that comes out of my mouth every time somebody's sitting across from me. That then is nothing. Not a degrading, disgusting story, because like I said, I'm willing to do anything for the feeling alcohol gives me, period. I didn't have a fifth step experience at all. I wasn't delighted. I was fucking disgusted. Like, oh my God. Oh my God. That was my experience with the fifth step. I was disgusted with myself, but it was beneficial because I believe that was the first time in my life that I was exposed to the truth. The first time. And the truth that I wrote down. Truth that I wrote down. And I see myself for the first time in my life. Like I said, I was just like, fooling my sponsor around. I had microwave recovery. I was sponsoring guys. I wasn't even 30 days sober. The amount of need that was happening in the clubhouse. And, you know, for next couple of years, I was Mr. AA, sponsoring everybody and their mother. I am the guy that if you would end up in a meeting with a new guy, you would send it to me and go talk to that guy. He's the winner. But on the inside, it wasn't clicking. A little flatlining, I heard a speaker say one time in AA. And I don't even know, I was maybe a little over 3 years sober, 2 years, I don't even remember anymore. Claire. Yeah, my friend Claire calls me with her, I don't even remember, some cousin. Can you help my cousin? We are going to a meeting. I'm talking with a dude. We go. My buddy Chris Brennan is running his big book study. I'm like, oh my God. There's nothing to study in the book, by the way. And we are in the big book study, and I'm just like in the middle of the meeting. Chris is saying something, and I'm just like in my head, I'm like, just shut up. But I didn't say that out loud. I was just like, done with this shit. And I walk out and I and get loaded. Just like that. He talked to me yesterday, never gonna drink again. But alcoholism don't care. Alcoholism don't care. My grandsponsor used to say, picking up a drink for an alcoholic is like having sex with a gorilla. It's over when gorilla says it's over. And that's exactly what happened to me. I wanted to be back in AA tomorrow. But tomorrow came 2.5 years later. It was August 24, 2008. I was in a week-long blackout. I don't even know what was going on, where I was. I just remember waking up. My friend Katie's calling me. I answer my phone. And she's like, where are you? They've all been looking for me. And I don't know where I'm at. But there's a million people around me. I'm like looking for a Philly skyline. I'm like, I grabbed the guy in front of me. There's like it's like thousands of people. I'm like, bro, where are we? He's like, you serious? I'm like, yes. He says, Allman Brothers concert in Camden. I was in Camden. I hate Allman Brothers. I don't know. I don't ask me nothing. I remember speaking at the meeting. Somebody was like, yeah, I was at that concert. I'm like, great. But that's it. I was there. I don't know how I ended up there. I'm like, it's all, I'm checking my stuff, my money. It's all good. Everything is fine. Don't worry. I'll be, you know, I was living in Fishtown at the time. Came back over the bridge, got more liquor, more coke, and a couple of Dominicans came home with me, which is always bad combination. And also by the end of that night, I ended up, you know, getting stabbed again. They just massacred me, threw me out of the hospital, you know, ambulance came, picked me up, stitched me up. And I remember being in Episcopal Hospital like until like 5:30 a.m. I had like, every inch was a cut from the like glass, and it was just like stitches and cuts on my entire body. And I'm coming down the steps in Episcopal. As I'm coming in a waiting room, there's like 30, you know, all these, my buddies, guys I was sponsoring, they're like, get in a car. You know, actually the guy I was talking before the meeting, my buddy Chuck, and his, you know, close friend Joe, who passed away, he's like, get in a car, you're going to York. My sponsor lived in York. I'm like, bro, I'm not going anywhere. I got 80 more bucks and I'm sick. And there's nothing is happening until I get loaded. And that's it. They put me in the car, I got loaded. They took me to York, Pennsylvania. I don't know anybody been in York. There's like a huge recovery community there that I, you know, I knew my sponsor lived there. I visited a couple of times. But it's like a terrible place. They'll give you these brochures. It's like, come visit historical York. I'm like, bro, it is historical because you motherfuckers, nobody did any renovations. It's like 1600. Oh my God. It's just like a one big ghetto. It's like, I never, like, just horrible. I don't know, you know, but like people there are amazing. I end up, you know, going to York and getting sober. You know, again, I was a friend of mine, Patty. I actually got sober I was living in a girls recovery house. So that's where I got sober. Me and five chicks. You know, because my, you know, close friend Patty, she's like, she runs a recovery house. I ended up getting sober there. And, I don't know, like people talk about, you know, spirituality. That is the word they use to describe our condition. And, you know, I feel that it's just like a distance. It's just like a distance between me and God. And when that distance becomes too big, too large, I start to live in a delusion that God is not even real no more. That's where I was. Like I was getting sober again. I had all this, you know, knowledge of AA. But like, I had a strong desire to like drink. And I remember just losing my mind for months and months in North Pennsylvania. talking to my sponsor every goddamn day. He actually was moving to Florida at the time. And then I remember him telling me, Ante, you know, we are here in AA measuring sobriety. That's what we measure. Like, time sober. It's like picking up chips. You know, who has 1 day, 10 days, 300 days. I, you know, lost my days, but I didn't lose any experience. Because basically, if we would pick up white chip, we pick up white chip only when we pick up a drink. And I feel like as an alcoholic that I am picking up a drink when I find myself in some kind of blackout. That's what my sponsor calls it, some spiritual blackout. When I'm in a spiritual blackout, I'll pick up a drink. But when I'm in a spiritual blackout, I'm going to lie to my wife. When I'm in a spiritual blackout, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to manipulate. I'm becoming the guy who is running the show. That's what I do in a spiritual blackout. Sir. I lost my train of thought. Sorry.
Spiritual blackout.
All right. So the good thing about these principles is that's what they are. They're principles. And what that means is I didn't know what a principle when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I asked my sponsor, what's a principle? And he would tell me, he would compare it to gravity. And he would say the anti-principle is something that applies to all of us equally. Because there's a principle of nature called gravity. And when you go up on a roof, and if I push you, you're going to go down because of it. You can say, I don't believe in gravity. You can say, I'm not aware of gravity. You can say, I don't like gravity. Well, gravity just don't give a shit what you feel about it. But it's a principle. Same with it. As an alcoholic, I am lacking the presence of an infinite and loving God in my life. And I can say, man, I don't believe they're like, really? I don't believe that shit. I don't like that shit. I'm not aware of that shit. It doesn't change the fact that you're dying from it. It just doesn't. But the good thing is, once they're applied again, they will work again. So I apply them again in my life and I recover again in my life. I stayed in New York, Pennsylvania for about 2 years and I moved back to Philly about 10, 11 years ago. And, I feel like, so much has happened in the last 13 years. What I brought to you guys, what I feel like we all bring here, it's like, I like doing puzzles in the wintertime. But this is what I feel like. We bring a puzzle of your shattered life. Like turn upside down, like here. This is what I was managing to do with it. And you guys tell me, well, this is the reason why it's all fucked up. You're putting your fingers in it. If you just go there, do these little things and let guys sort it out for you. See what happens. And like I said, we don't do that by virtue. I do that by default. You know, I got on my knees because there was nowhere else to go. And I said the prayer to God that I didn't believe in or understood. But I, you know, I remember my first prayer. I said, God, I don't know who or what you are, but if you are, I need help. And nothing happened. I thought something would happen because Ante said the first prayer. But actually nothing happened. But, that's exactly what I'm sorry. I'm losing myself a little bit. So that's exactly what I meant when I said we bring the puzzle, because that's what happened to me. When I was doing some stuff, it got arranged for me, and I would peek over the shoulder at my life every couple of years. I'm like, oh my God, it's awesome. You know, I love it. It's not the shit that I was, you know, planning to do, but it's shit that's kind of set up in a place for me. I was illegal in this country because I was just, you know, too busy shooting heroin and then figuring out my student visa. So now I can't, like 10 years later, I'm sober. Can we just like move on? No, you broke a federal law. You gotta go back home. I'm like, no. I didn't see my family 11 years. I didn't, wasn't allowed to drive for 11 years. Whatever shit happened. That's why I like have like really zero tolerance to my new guys if they start complaining about like license being suspended for 90 days. I'm like, dude, I'm not the guy. I'm just not the guy. But, you know, but that's the mess I brought to you guys. That's the mess I brought to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was, you know, I got married in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm gonna be married to my wife about 10 years now. And on, you know, my wedding day 10 years ago, my mother and my sisters came. That was the first time in 11 years that I was able to see them, and I was there waiting for them on my sobriety checkpoint. That was the first time my mother seen her son normal and sober. That was the first time I was a son to her. I don't remember, man. That was the first time I was a brother to my sister. So I don't know. I learned how to live in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know what to do with myself. I opened the business. I don't know how to, like I told you, I graduated in risk management and insurance, and I swear to God that I would rather be homeless than be in a cubicle. So I just like opened a construction company and, hope for the best. And that was 11 years ago. Like, you know what? I know traditions. That's how I live my life, and that's how I like run my business, by these traditions. I'm not there to make money. I'm there to provide a service, and I have a successful business that's been running almost 12 years now. I wasn't there to make money. I know what happened. Money showed up. When I stopped creeping up on every girl at the meeting, you know what happened? She showed up. You know what I mean? I'm not here. You know, like I said, I sponsor a bunch of guys. I'm not into 1 year, 10 years, whatever year. I tell my guys, you ready for a relationship when you don't need one. That's it. Let's go out and date when you can handle being on your own. I have a great relationship with my wife. Like we hang out too much with too many people in AA because everybody like something is fucked up. That's how we're feeling good. My man, we're doing good. We're doing good. This is madness. But 4 years ago, life is perfect. We did some traveling. We're coming back to making some kids because that was the plan. We got careers. We got everything going on. Came, you know, we were in Croatia for a few months. Came back here. And my stomach was hurting, and I ended up going to the doctor, and you know, long story short, stage 4 colon cancer, you got 2 years to live. Like, you fucking kidding me? That's it. Yeah. I ended up in the University of Pennsylvania. Like I said, some belly ache, couple of scans later, and that's it. We want to put you on palliative care and give you some fucking chemo and go fuck yourself. Wow. Yes. Try to be spiritual. You know that. Man, I can't even describe how, I don't even know. It's really hard to talk about it. It's just like anger. What the fuck? I just ran Ironman race 3 months prior. Half Ironman race. It took about 7 hours. Just to give you perspective what shape I was in. And it's like a last stage of colon cancer and mess. Everything is upside down. Fuck you, God. Fuck you, AA. Don't fucking call me to speak. I have nothing to say. I got called to speak many times. Like, I don't want to come. There's nothing to say. I'm not, you know, if you want me to give you a fucking death message, I'll be there. That's it. That was it. It's like, and it, you know, it was up and down, chemotherapy, these surgeries. You know, like I said, you heard my story. I have a, you know, opiate problem. I had liver surgeries. My, you know, I'm at the hospital, MSK in New York. My doctor always tell me, he told me, if anybody ever asks you, I am the physician who did most liver surgeries in the world. His name is Dr. D'Angelica. And he said, and I have never had a patient that they removed 80% of my liver. I didn't took a single oxycodone, and I walked out of the hospital in 3 days. I can't take narcotics. I just can't. I can't. Like, I know there's all kind of, you know, I'm not here to cause any controversy. I can't take him. I don't care if Jose gives it to me or my physician prescribed it to you. I can't take him. And that ends that story. I have allergic reaction. I was sober many times before. I remember being sober one time, almost a year, fell from the roof, broke ribs, arm, a few places. They thought I broke my back. They put me in Hahnemann Hospital, shot me with morphine, and that was it. I went on the race. So, you know, it's, pretty difficult to manage, you know, this kind of sickness without pain medication. And it's like, I got really depressed, really angry, you know, just like we talked about before the third step, it said you gotta build your foundation on a sand. And I feel like the, you know, my rock foundation that I built got shooken up at the rock. That it's like I trusted you. Yeah, I told the guy, I fucking trusted you, and this is it. If I knew this is gonna happen, I wouldn't waste all this fucking time. I wouldn't. I would be doing something else, but that's it. You know, I'm here 4 years later. I'm not, you know, cancer free by any, you know, stretch, but, so far, you know, it's been against all odds that I'm still here. I was probably surrounded maybe 10 to 15 patients like me about the same time they were doing chemo. I'm the only one alive. I don't know what God is. I don't know what God's will is. You know, I don't even fucking know if God is real or not. But what I do know is that when I live my life as if He's real, He's my loving Father who takes care of me, my life gets good. My life gets cool. My head gets at peace. I'm happy. I can exist. I know there's a power that gives me hope, that gives me purpose, that gives me direction. That's power. It's within me. The power is within every one of us. You know, I get in touch with that or tap into that as a result of this. And these are done. These are not hurdles. This is a daily training for me. These are not hurdles that I'm like jump across and I did my 12 steps. I feel these are more of a guardrails that keeps me on the path. They told me also I'm infertile, can't have kids. So me and my wife had a baby. He's 18 months old, Luca, with IVF. And then a few months ago, my wife just comes home and says, pregnant. How the fuck you're pregnant? Pregnant. So we got the same doctor that told me 4 years ago that I can't have kids on a fake Zoom meeting. And I'm like, bro, it was you. It's you who told me no kids. I hope you just didn't push me to spend like 40 grand on your bullshit fertility clinic. And he's like, I don't know what to say. So that's it. That's the end of my story. I don't know what's happening. You know, that's it. I have no clue. I know me and my wife are expecting a girl in January 9th. We have a boy. I still get up in the morning. I still shouldn't live the way I live. I should be dead in the gutter. You know, but we do stay sober. Anybody new here, anybody is getting sober here, there's a couple lines in the big book. Job, no job, cancer, no fucking cancer, wife, no wife, kid, no kid, we stay sober. You know, I try every day to carry a vision of my God in my activity. When I fail, I turn, I can be a bitch. When I'm not, I'm kind of a pretty decent human being, and that's just the result of you guys. So thank you for that.